you recently wrote an op-ed where you had a confession saying that you like Illinois. Why is that something that you need to confess? Is that dangerous ground for a state politician these days?
Well, we have to do something about the Illinois bashing that's been going on. Maybe it's because we have one-party rule here, and people think that Republicans think that it's okay just to have no incentive to say anything nice about the state. But the fact is, Doug Whitley, head of the Chamber of Commerce, recently wrote a very interesting article talking about the assets that we have in Illinois. So I just wanted to make sure people were aware of them. We have a great educated workforce. People make more money in Illinois than all the states that surround us. Our taxes are lower than all the states that are around us. We have a great transportation system, probably the best in the nation, more interstates than any other state in the nation, the rail center, and 3 airport hubs. So these things are all very positive things for our state, and we should keep those in mind when we debate the issues.
You mentioned Republicans. Bruce Rauner, obviously the party's candidate for governor, uses the phrase often that Illinois is in a, quote, death spiral. Is that dangerous for Illinois?
He's not familiar with what we've been doing for the last 5 and now 6 years in the state of Illinois. Major improvements in everything we've been doing after the worst recession in the history of the states. Paying down bills, balancing budgets, cutting Medicaid. Somebody should tell them that we've already cut Medicaid. We've obviously passed a big pension reform bill that, if constitutional, will save a lot of money. We've done all these things. We've made tough choices, and he's apparently not familiar with that.
One of the reasons Illinois does get a bad rap is because of its finances. Much has been made of cuts that Illinois has already made, and yet there's still a backlog of bills in the billions of dollars. Obviously, you have come out in support of the governor's plan to extend the current income tax rate. What is the plan for that? Are you hoping for the House to call it and pass it first? Because it seems like previously the Senate has taken the lead on tax increase measures only to kind of have the tax football laying and it just drops in the House field and doesn't go anywhere for quite some time. What is the plan?
Well, we heard the governor say that he thinks that the temporary income tax should be extended. We've done this in the past. We've had actually 3 temporary tax increases in Illinois since I've been here. Governor Thompson had one in the early 80s, and then Governor Thompson had, which expired. Governor Thompson had a second one in the late 80s, which Governor Egger said should be extended. So just like Governor Quinn is now saying we should make the temporary income tax permanent, Governor Egger did that, and we followed his lead. But if we don't, there's a whole different budget that we'd have to consider, because there's such a big disparity between how much money is available if you don't have that extension. So that's the choice. We feel like the House should take this up first. We have more Democrats here who are supportive of the measure, so we'll wait and see what the House does. If the House doesn't decide to extend the income tax, then we'll have to work on a very draconian doomsday type budget. But people then might fully appreciate what tough choices we've been making down here and how difficult our choices have been.
Was it a mistake to have passed a temporary tax hike in the first place versus just take a vote? It's a hard vote, but get it done, and then Illinois would have more stability going forward, know where the picture is, not have to face this possibility of draconian cuts.
We didn't know 3.5 years ago what the economy was going to be like today. We didn't know it was going to be a weak recovery, as it has been. You know, right now in the nation, every state has fewer jobs than they had in 2007. Even booming states like North Dakota and Texas, right? So we have not had the recovery that we expected. We didn't know that back in 2011. That's why we made it temporary, as we had in the 2 previous occasions with Governor Thompson. In one case, we let it expire. In the other case, we didn't, because we needed it. So that's what the debate. When we debated that bill back in 2011, I said, this is going away by operation of law. If there's not a vote to extend it or to come back with a different rate, then it'll go away. And that's exactly what we're debating right now.
But now your members are in the House as well, are put in this precarious position once again. It's 2 tough votes instead of 1 going toward an election.
You know, maybe it should have been 4.5 years so that it would cover a full fiscal year, because right now it expires midway in a fiscal year. But the fact is we get accused of voting on bills after elections. This time the governor's stepping up and saying, hey, right before an election, this is what we think we should do. Governor Edgar did the same thing. He said, as a Republican, let's keep the income tax not temporary, but extend it. Their Democratic opponents said, no, let it expire. And the Republican Governor Edgar won. So that's what Governor Quinn is doing here. He's saying this is what we need for a balanced budget. Our tax rates are still lower than all the states that surround us, including Indiana. Some people think that they're lower, but they have a local tax, which is actually higher. Indianapolis has a higher income tax rate than Chicago. So, and all the other states have much higher rates, as a matter of fact, for those people who make a lot of money, because ours is flat. Theirs is progressive. So this is what we should be doing right up front. Take a vote, see if it passes. And if it doesn't, you'll see a real doomsday draconian budget.
If it doesn't, that would be the case with supermajorities of Democrats in both chambers of the General Assembly. There also seems to be a holdup, at least Senator Lightford says in the Senate, there is not yet enough the votes to pass a minimum wage hike. The Speaker has said the same is the case in the House. Explain. Yeah. How with Democratic supermajorities, not just majorities, but supermajorities, is your party potentially unable, who knows, at this point, but how would there even be the possibility of not getting these Democratic initiatives through?
Yeah, most of the big successes we've had in the last 5 years have been bipartisan efforts. The Capitol bill was bipartisan. The pension bill was bipartisan. The workers' comp bill was bipartisan. The McCormick Place bill was bipartisan. Education reform is bipartisan. And unfortunately, the Republicans have decided not to participate in the budget. So this will be the sixth straight year they're not going to do it. They're hoping that they can elect a Republican governor, okay? So they're not cooperating. But we're talking about tax issues, which are very difficult issues. And that's why it would be nice if they would sit down and negotiate with us and work with us, but they're not doing it. So it leaves it all up to Democrats in an election year. So that makes it more difficult to pass a bill. But it's totally necessary when people realize that I don't think they want to have $967 million in cuts to education if we don't extend this tax and keep it the way it is right now at the same rates.
Would there be any justice in that sense that, let's pretend, going forward, that Bruce Rauner were to win? And with the tax issue unresolved, he's been out there and says he has a plan. We haven't seen it yet, but for Illinois' finances, but it would involve the rollback of the income tax. Hey, newly elected governor, there you go. This is in your lap.
You know, we have to be more responsible than that. Bruce Rauner's playing politics. He's not going to give you a plan. He's just going to say, cut the waste and fraud. He doesn't probably even know that much about what's in our budget at this point, and no one seems like has yet asked him for those answers. So hopefully,
we've tried.
Yeah, well, hopefully you'll be successful, because I don't think you're going to find much. And so we have to be responsible. We have to do what we know we have to do, and that is to pass a budget that funds and invests money in education and provides money for basic human services, while at the same time we've done so much work in cutting state government where we can and making it more efficient. He doesn't know that, but he'll find out if he looks closely at what we've been working on for the last 5 years.
He doesn't know that because, or may not know that because he likes to talk about it, how much an asset it is that he is a newcomer to state government. That seems to play into his term limits initiative. You have been a part of the General Assembly since, I think, 1979. And what, give me a reason why it is an advantage to have a career in state government for that long versus being a newcomer? Why should term limits not be in place? And how are people advantaged by people that have been coming to Springfield for decades?
Yeah, last year when people got sworn in the Senate, there were an average term for the senators were 6 years and 2 months. There were 16 freshmen senators out of 59. We have a great combination of people like Senator Redonio with institutional memory and myself, along with a bunch of young folks who have really young, fresh ideas. And so it's a great combination. In the states that have had this imposed on them, it doesn't work. Lobbyists and the staff just take over. The state provides basic services. It's not a company where you can just sell off the Medicaid part of your company because it's not making any money. You have to provide basic services and educational services, and these involve some tough choices. So this is what the public should demand these answers from Mr. Rauner during this campaign.
There are those that say it would be to Illinois' advantage, regardless of the person, but to have a Republican in the governor's office, that one-party control has been bad for state government. Do you see any truth to that? That, as you've talked about, it especially facing an election year, it can be difficult for one party to wear the jacket for all policies, and that there could be either better conversations or at least a spread of responsibility that would maybe lead Illinois forward if there were some more Republicans in powerful positions?
It's not necessary because, as I've said, the issues that we've had to tackle in the last 5 years have required bipartisan votes. And I certainly have worked with the Republicans on all these issues. And we wouldn't have passed them without the bipartisan support. So we already have bipartisanship here in Illinois. Keep in mind also, there's a total different mentality, I think, in the Republican Party than back when Jim Thompson was the governor and Jim Edgar. There were moderate Republicans. This party tends to nominate people who seem to be extremely conservative, even though they try to shift back to the middle after a primary. We don't need somebody who's so anti-union. We take on the unions when we need to, on pensions and on McCormick Place, for example, but we don't think they should be abolished, like some people. And the insensitivity of being in favor of the minimum wage being reduced as opposed to increased is evidence of the fact that this is a cold and heartless party that is not worthy of having the governorship.
There is also a constitutional effort that would change how legislative districts are drawn. There are those who say that because Democrats are in charge, they get to determine the boundaries without really any or enough input from Republicans or the other party, that it's behind closed doors. What is your assessment of the redistricting amendment? And if it does get the number of signatures that are necessary, would you be involved in any effort, either through the State Board of Elections, knocking off signatures, or a lawsuit to try and get it off the ballot?
We had the every 10 years you redistrict, you have to do it by passing a bill. We passed legislation requiring input from all throughout the state, had hearings all throughout the state. Passed a bill, there was a lawsuit, and two Republican-dominated courts ruled that our statute was constitutional because you have to follow the Voting Rights Act. You have to follow case law. You have to make sure that minorities have an opportunity to elect people. It's very complicated. You can't just throw numbers into a computer. Now, what we did in both the congressional races as well as the legislative races, districts, was to have a fair map that resulted in 18 congressional districts that Mark Kirk won two-thirds of them. Mark Kirk won 12 of the 18 existing brand-new congressional districts. That doesn't sound like gerrymandering to me. How about the Illinois Senate? There's 59 Senate districts. Bill Brady, in 2010, won 31, a majority of the Senate districts. That doesn't sound like gerrymandering to me. So I think, once again, people have put out false information. They haven't looked at the statistics. And you cannot just look at a map and say, well, that looks funny. That's drawn funny. Well, that's driven by the desire to comply with the Constitution, to comply with the Voting Rights Act, to comply with the opportunity for minorities to be put in districts where they can have an opportunity to elect one of their own. And so if people knew those things, I think they'd be less inclined to want to support a change.
So you do not support the change. Would you, however, be part of an effort to get it off the ballot if it's successful?
Well, let's wait and see.